Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. This is Dave Kruger. I'm excited about doing our series together and talking with you and getting your thoughts and questions about wellness coaching. Let me give you a brief overview, and I'm keeping the line open. We're having an open mic at the beginning for any questions, discussion, and we'll do again at the end. So if you'll manage the background noise, a mute button or star six. From the landing page that you were given access to, there should be a download of the outline of the workbook and where the recordings will be posted, those four ports after our seminar, within at least 12 hours of that. Thank you for those of you who did see the email at this point. I know some of you signed on late and were not privy to that email. The email with the two questions. One, what's the most important question you want answered during this series? And if you were to walk away at the end of the 4 weeks saying it's been one of the best seminars and useful for you, what would you walk away with? And think about the parallel. These are the questions, basically, that you frame or create the map for each coaching conversation. What do you want to focus on, and what do you want to take away? So having that in mind may be helpful. Also, I use that kind of feedback. When you send me emails, and I've gotten some terrific responses already. Thank you for those of you who have sent those. It helps guide me for what you're really interested in, and I'll wrap the responses into the discussion that I do. I'm operating from the same outline that you see and maybe have printed, and I did it in it's a pretty thorough, it's an annotated outline, so you don't have to take a whole bunch of notes. So, anyone want to begin with a question that you'd like answered or a takeaway that you have in mind, especially if you haven't sent me an email back? I'm very eager to hear what your interest is in this area, what you'd like to use our discussions and the seminar material to develop.
Yeah, hi, this is Ann. I didn't get I didn't see the email. I just recently signed up, so maybe I didn't get it yet. But, so I think the niche I like to work with are people who are making transitions from a health and wellness perspective, but I just think this will be able to provide me with more information and greater tools for people who have even a greater challenge, which I've worked with. So sometimes I also need the assistance to help them through it in a more effective way, and I'm hoping that this might give me that.
And that's the idea of what we will do in developing this, is help you develop your story so that you're in the best position to be able to help your clients and facilitate that. So and one thing I would add, and I'll tell you the backstory or the reason in a second. I would suggest that each of you at the end of each seminar write the one thing that's the most important for you that you're taking away And that's also, remember, that's one of the basic endings of the simple coaching model, to ask the client what is the most important thing that they're taking away so that they synthesize and integrate that, put it in an output channel. Now, here's a brief backstory, and some of you have heard me say this before. University of Waterloo did a study that a matched group of people, large group of people, read the same passage in a book, half read it out loud, half read it silently. Everyone did the same test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better. They put it in an output channel, and what that does is create a closure in the brain, a memory with greater access to that experience when it's conceptualized in that way. So that may be helpful. See if it works for you. So anything else that you have in mind that you'd like us to be sure and discuss?
This is Marcia Dixon.
Welcome. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. I'm already a certified life coach and certified nutritional health coach. And I'm taking this seminar because I want to be better equipped to service the clients that I want to deal with. I want to deal with women more so in their health. And I've just had a health challenge. I'm 2.5 years out of 2 cancers, ovarian and uterus cancer. So I want to be able to help people to navigate their eating and their wholeness of health in a way that they can reach it without feeling that they're being defeated by it. And also,
okay,
just
you're
to
at the right
help your life.
So what's the most important question you have that you'd like to be sure that we address and that you want to walk away with?
I want to know more about the balance of how to address the eating habits, the nutritional habits of people, how
okay.
to balance that with their everyday life.
Okay. Okay. Here's the secret up front that we'll return to, but you might as well know. The secret is, if you really want to change, focus on the system, not just the goal. Everybody has the same goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. If you want to focus on change, look at the system you create for whatever that is, and we'll address that. There are microsystems and macrosystems. We're going to look at a macrosystem. We're going to start in Seminar 2, looking at the roadmap process, the roadmap for wellness. That's a 7-step process to understand all the components of a wellness story, all the algorithms, and to look at how to craft in a co-created way with a client change or how to create a new story. And those 7 steps are fundamental. They're the bedrock of looking at a new story. And a story is a metaphor, in my view, that we use as coaches, because when a client's talking to us, they're not telling us their story. They're not talking about a story. It's the way things are. We have a concept as coaches that a story has a beginning, middle, and end. It has a challenge, a development, a resolution. That's what the simple coaching model does, to look at what you want to focus on and where you want to get to, and then the middle is jazz to successively approximate that end. But that's a system. And we're going to look at different systems, and we'll look at specific aspects and applications of that for you to help your client. So, great question, and we'll come back to that more than once. Anything else, just briefly, before we move into our what we're supposed to be talking about? Anyone
hi,
else?
David, hi. Hello to everybody. Danny Bedoni. What are...
Welcome. Hey, great questions you sent in. Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know the question. What's like, you know, wellness is such an important topic, and it's so wonderful to hear everybody put their questions. For me would be, what are the latest breakthroughs?
Okay.
That you've encountered that you've seen in wellness, in your coaching, that you've seen a transformation, a huge transformation. What has been what you've seen
that we can learn from.
All right. We will definitely return to that, but we'll lead with creating a system and applying that, but look at what do you do when somebody has no models of doing something new and different. You guys might as well get this out of the way right now. Look at my last blog, Mentor Path. You see the link at the in my signature line. Look at the last blog. It's called The Vampire Problem. That will adumbrate some things that we're going to be talking about when somebody doesn't have a model of how to do things. They don't have internal models, mental representations to synthesize and create new applications or operate in an intuitive way, because intuition operates on existing models and a synthesis from that. So we'll return to that. Thanks, Danny. That's great. I'm glad you said that, so we're all looking ahead to that. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode. I'm hoping we'll have a bit of time at the end for questions or comments. If we don't, still jot them down and fire them off to me, and I'll incorporate it in our discussion or in my discussion. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the background noise. Okay, we're going to talk in this first seminar about the wellness revolution and the power of story. So we'll talk about this powerful way, I think, of conceptualizing writing a new wellness story. So this is going to parallel the introduction and preface in the workbook that you have. So the following three sessions, weeks 2, 3, and 4, we'll develop and apply a model of coaching wellness that can be used with individuals and groups. So throughout, I'm going to speak about your wellness story, you, the coach, first. I encourage you to do the exercises and the work pages in the workbook to parallel our discussions. Then you'll know firsthand how to coach a new wellness story because you've already done it with an N of one, namely you. So although we're going to discuss an application to wellness, you're going to see that the principles are fundamental to all growth, change, and success, that roadmap system can apply to a relationship story, a money story, a life story, whatever, those are the fundamentals. So now, for wellness coaching, why you? You are professionals who know how to listen and guide people. You are change experts and choice architects. You know that intentions need a strategy and a plan, a system. You'll learn a proven system of transformation for lasting lifestyle change. And I've already mentioned the roadmap is the acronym for the 7 steps to go through that process. It's a master plan to guide you to empowered wellness in your life story. Once you do that, including the tools and exercise, then you can coach it. So what's the need for wellness coaching, you have asked? You've seen what I believe are some compelling statistics in the workbook preface, if you've looked at that. So here's my belief. People don't need more advice about vitamins or told again to exercise or lose weight or stop smoking. They don't do what they're told, even when they pay to be told. Here's a good example of that. Let's take an example of consulting an expert who tells you exactly what to do. You go to a doc and you have a problem, you're in pain, you're concerned. The doc gives advice. Let's say that's in the form of a prescription. What happens then? You've gone to the expert. The expert's made a recommendation. More than 50% of people don't actually fill the prescription. Then of those who do fill it, slightly more than 50% don't take it as directed. So even when they pay an expert, less than 1 in 4 actually follow that advice. What's missing? They don't have their own story. They have the doc's story. And the doc tells them what to do. And you know from your client, this is a sidebar here totally, which is why we may not have discussion time, but I'll try to rein that in. You advise your client what to do. Now, first of all, anytime you share a belief, an idea, a fact, information, the client is going to compare what they already know or what they believe, for example, with what you say. If it fits, they're going to find a way to confirm it, confirmation bias. If it doesn't fit, they're immediately going to look at ways to refute it. So what happens then is the boomerang effect, that someone is even more entrenched in their original position after they get advice or opinion or shared belief, because they've actively engaged that to either agree with it, confirm it, or refute it. So that's why advice doesn't work. One of the reasons, actually. And because advice is your story, not the client's story, like the doc who prescribed. That's his or her story. So people need a clear, specific, stepwise program for change and an informed guide to help them. They need an accountability partner who's an expert at change to help them create a story themselves and to own it. The mission of wellness coaching is to help people establish healthier lifestyles, to write their wellness stories. In addition to individuals interested in health and longevity, who needs wellness coaching? Well, one of the answers, any business interested in achieving these goals. Reduce medical claims, lower stress, reduced absenteeism, improving morale, improving retention rates, generate overall savings to organizations. So we're talking a little bit about a scope of marketing to move into a framework of thinking beyond just a single client. So what's the scope then of wellness coaching? Well, so in addition to individual and group coaching, examples of some of the portals of entry, the gatekeepers, human resource heads and groups, employee assistance programs, healthcare insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, small business owners, especially companies that are self-insured, school systems, government agency. Now, who are your natural affiliates and complementary to your practice in wellness coaching if you decide to do that? Fitness trainers and clubs, nutritionists, holistic care providers, healthcare providers, consortiums of wellness practitioners. So now let's move to an application. Why is change so difficult? In studies of coronary bypass patients, when their lives are at risk unless they adopt healthier lifestyles, these are people on the coronary intensive care unit. How many do you think change their habits? 1 in 9, after they've been near death. It took Ignaz Semmelweis more than 20 years to persuade doctors that washing their hands could save the lives of mothers giving birth. He had the data, the proof, but that wasn't enough to change minds. He died, actually, before people believed and changed. Changing behavior is difficult. So a fundamental question, you guys have asked this of yourself, and your client, what keeps people from doing what they need to do for themselves? What makes it so difficult to change, even when someone's life depends on, even when they know exactly what they need to do? Data shows that driving while texting is more dangerous than driving while drunk. But how many people does that stop? Some of the resistance is staying in a comfort zone, the predictable and the familiar, our default mode. Another component of resistance is our brains resist change, because once we do something in a repeated way, our brain programs that to make it automatic and save energy. And George Costanza actually summarized this whole neuroscience dynamic when he said, I like things you don't have to think about. So you have to own your wellness story. A light on the dashboard appears, says service engine now. You can disregard or disconnect it rather than actually addressing it, and you're not reminded. Denial is another form of engagement, even though it's invisible consciously. People are afraid to go to the doctor, but they aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Making a physical symptom go away does the same thing. The symptom is a signal. It's a story in itself that needs, begs to be listened to and understood. Your body will simply find another way to bring you more information. When you listen to whispers, no one has to shout, including your body. And just because you're not sick doesn't mean you're healthy necessarily. Wellness, then, is a mindset. This mindset gives ownership of a life story of wellness to the individual. With this ownership comes a responsibility and privilege that each thought, feeling, experience, and behavior is created each moment. So listen to passive language in your client. Well, this just seems to happen. Or if they use passive language in constructing, well, there was just something blocked me, instead of actively seeing what they think, feel, and experience as what they create each moment. Warren Buffett used the analogy of buying a car. If you get a new car every few years, the approach would be different than if from the beginning you knew you were going to choose one car and have it for the rest of your life. You'd do research, most likely, to know the best care, probably change the oil more frequently, do everything possible for maintenance. Knowing it would be the only car for the rest of your life, you'd take meticulous care of it. Your body is the only one you'll have for the rest of your life. Your body is irreplaceable. Everything about its care and maintenance matters. It reflects the cumulative care you take of it. Everything counts. Look at the addendum in the workbook of how, I think it's page 6 of the addendum, to see how two little French fries can weigh 40 pounds. Wellness integrates mind, body, and spirit with a balanced flow of energy. So I'd recommend, if you haven't already, to highlight or read at some point the Wellness System of Energy in the preface of the workbook, beginning page little XII. It introduces some later discussion on the impact of change on mind and brain. Now, from the teachings of the Tao, the source of spiritual energy is physical, rooted in the base chemistry of the body, neurochemical system, as a mediator, conduit. Self-cultivation refines this energy for spiritual attainment. Enlightenment is a psychophysiological achievement, a state of being rather than intellectual understanding. Spirituality is an expression of energy. And you know, when I'm talking, we're going to be returning to this. So let's look at a new wellness story, the concept of wellness and story combined. We're in a revolution in the science of wellness and of aging. We understand how our bodies work at the cellular level. We understand healthy aging. We can live healthier lives than anyone in all of biological time. Now, this has taken a while, because health is biologically more complex than disease. For example, of 300 people surveyed, three activities stood out above all others as ones that prompted procrastination. Three areas where people know exactly what to do and they don't do it: working out, healthy diet, money. More than anything else, people put off exercise, eating a planned healthy diet, and, for example, funding their retirement plan. What if you treated a task such as exercise with the same mindset as work, or coach your client to do this? The mindset that you most likely have of work is you don't get up each day and debate about whether you're going to do it, whether you will or won't work, whether you're going to take off a couple of days or just skip it or start next Tuesday or, you know, I'll work it, I'll get to it. Work is there. You get up, you go to work, you don't debate it, you don't consider yourself virtuous, when you do, in school, later in work, you show up. It's an organizing force, a deeply etched default mode. You go to work every day, whatever constitutes work, including full-time parenting. Now, this is something, I'll return to this, but this is a concept that Dr. Henry Lodge, Jr., who's devoted 35 years of his professional life as an internist in New York City to wellness, and a book I'd recommend is Younger Next Year by Henry Lodge, L-O-D-G-E, Jr. I think there's somewhere that I referenced this in the outline. And there's a companion book, Younger Next Year for Women. When I collaborated with him and we co-presented, I got to know his work. And this was, I worked out maybe three, sometimes four times a week, but he has the concept, and we will return to this, that after age 50, that at least, that you need to work out 6 days a week for those being cardiovascular. Well, I did that, and it's had exponential returns of energy, of, you know, I tell my my family, I take my brain running every day. More than half of it's my brain. The rest is my heart, and the rest is just to, you know, be able to keep up with my grandkids. So I more than you ever want to know about. One more thing. I grew up on a farm and ranch. Every morning before school, I fed the cattle. Same every evening. It was a given. No questions asked. Age 8 on, morning, evening, 7 days a week, cattle had to eat. Now, that as a given, there's no question about it. I didn't debate about it. I didn't gringe or have opposition to it. When I started college and had 8 o'clock classes and I heard people using their energy to complain about it, I was thankful, finally, for having to do that. Now, my dad helped make it my story. It stopped being work when some of them were my cattle. So exercise, the point here, can be the same mindset, the default story, but it needs a plan and a commitment, just like your business. That's why people need coaches. That's the beginning answer to a couple of the questions some of you have sent in. Create a plan and a commitment. Create a system. Now, biologically, your body only knows two things, growth or decay. Back to Henry Lodge. 70% of aging is not aging, but decay. Blood vessels go to every millimeter of your body and each bathe cells in repair or inflammation. Exercise heals wounded vessels. Here's a quote from Henry Lodge in Younger Next Year. Steady exercise is a coded message to your body and your mind. In 20 years, failure to exercise 6 days a week will seem as self-destructive as smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. We're going to look at the process of change in an informed and a systematic way. And first, I want to provide some context and stimulus maybe for you to actively work on the exercises and quizzes in the workbook for each of the 7 steps of the roadmap. So let's look first in an overview about the power of story. And those of you who have or might consider using this as a metaphor for your internal organization as a coach in listening to a client. Let's look at the power of story. Write this question down. What is my story? Now, come back to it later when you can think about it, but think about your story. It makes you who you are. Summarize your plot in one sentence. Bullet your major storylines, not your bio, your title, your role, your plot. Then write this question. What is my wellness story? Keep those two questions to consider and consider making an appointment with yourself to brainstorm these two questions. So here are some of the premises that our work together will be based on. Remember, we're doing the overview in this first seminar. And this is all in your outline, the major headers are in your outline. Plot is the structure, purpose, and pattern of a story. For a life story, it's the outline of life narratives. The core assumptions of life stories inform what we look for and how we attribute meaning to what we experience. Two, we learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. The brain is a pattern recognition and a story-creating organ. James Watson, the guy who discovered DNA with Crick, said, "You know, I can remember something when I fit it into a story." So a story is a system for holding together facts. A story makes things make sense. Defense lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Muriel Rukeyser said, "The world is made up of stories, not atoms." We personify the economy or the stock market as if each were a story of its own. We make a story out of events in order to understand and remember. We ascribe a story with a mind of its own to our own creation. My ulcer acted up. My weight got in the way. Three, we each have a personal story with a plot and storylines. Our beliefs and assumptions ghostwrite our story. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our software determines what we perceive and process. The brain needs a story. It will infer one. So it's useful and helpful to know the lexicon. So our plot then consists of our core beliefs and how we use that to make sense of things. We then create narratives according to plot, since mind and brain are both programmed to process by the default mode and to ignore things that don't fit our assumptions. Four. A life story contains silent assumptions and emotional scripts. Our assumptions tell us what to look for, how to perceive and process experiences. You're listening for this with your client. And since 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious, this is what you're paid very well to listen to. Not just the content, but the process, so that you're hearing unconscious biases. You're hearing limiting assumptions. You're hearing various things when someone constructs a story about what works and what doesn't. So our assumptions tell us what to look for, and we believe in order to see. Some of our beliefs and patterns may be invisible even to ourselves. Here's an example. Gregory Maguire, a best-selling novelist and playwright, most recently the Broadway hit Wicked, said this, "You know, I didn't realize at first, but there's no central character in any one of my 24 books who doesn't have a dead mother or a lost parent. Maguire's mother died from complications during his birth. After his 23rd book, he became actually conscious of that to say, 'I can't seem to start a novel unless the character doesn't have a mother. The mother's still alive. What's the problem? There's nothing to write about.'" Five, we believe and remember only that which fits into our plot. What we expect to happen in the present reveals instantly our experience in the past. Psychoanalysts call it transference. Someone abandoned, for example, early in life will expect more of the same in future relationships, even though circumstances change. All subsequent information is absorbed, filtered, and organized by the narrative plot. Here's a sidebar promise. I haven't thought about it. I've never done this in a seminar series before, but there's a white paper that I'd like to send you that it just occurs to me may be helpful to you in looking at some of this material. It's not about wellness, but it's about attachment patterns, and there may be some ways of understanding and listening that will be helpful. I'll send it as an attachment to each of you. Six, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. We see what we believe, and we're always right because we write the story. Here's a brief example. Two anthropologists were chosen to enter separate, essentially identical ape colonies to live and observe for a year. They had remarkable similarities of personality, philosophy, education, when the two anthropologists emerged after a year, not communicating with each other, to compare notes, they expected essential similarities, but they had remarkable discrepancies. One anthropologist, after an initial period of transition, was accepted by the apes, integrated into the colony, and achieved a real comfort and unity with the ape. Got remarkable data. The other anthropologist never got beyond the social periphery of his colony. He remained careful and vigilant, always seemed right on the cusp of a conflict, never achieved that harmony. The anthropologist could not understand the discrepant results or find any reasons. They puzzled for months until they finally found one difference. The anthropologist, who was the uncomfortable, careful outsider, had a gun. Now, his gun never showed. He never used it. The apes didn't know he had it, but he knew he had it. He knew that if things got tough, he had an out. The anthropologist who had no gun had a commitment. He knew from the beginning that he would either make it or not on his own. In retrospect and reconstruction, each of their assumptions created the reality that they experienced. We tell our story, then our story tells us. 7, a story can define possibility. Now, you guys know this story. In centuries of recorded time, no one ran the mile in under 4 minutes. It was deemed by medical experts as physiologically impossible. In 1954, Dr. Roger Bannister broke the four-minute mile. Within the following 12 months, over a dozen other runners broke the four-minute mile as well. The obstacle of the impossible could no longer be constructed. Today, this is commonplace. When the mindset of what's possible changes, reality then changes as well. And I heard a follow-up story. As soon as Bannister crossed the finish line, he passed out. Someone revived him with smelling salts, and his first question was, am I dead? Because that was the assumption if somebody broke the four-minute mile. 8, a story can define reality. A placebo generates the effect of the accompanying story. A patient's prescribed an inert pill and some expectation, in other words, a story. In the majority of cases, the story becomes a reality. By anticipating an experience, we create it. The story generates a truth so powerful it can even reverse the pharmacological effect of a real medicine. So a placebo is a white lie. It's a fiction that becomes a truth. In fact, a recent MIT study showed that a more expensive placebo works significantly better than a cheaper one. Same placebo, different stories. Now, this isn't about being gullible or suggestible. For example, when a patient believes something will reduce pain, it releases endorphins. Medical research suggests that up to 70% of successful non-surgical treatments are the result of the patient's belief that the treatment will work. 9, a story can take over the author. Listen to these expressions. My anger took over. My fear stopped me. My doubt paralyzed me. My work eroded my free time. My weight gets in the way. All of these are seeming explanations. And the story that seems to write itself, and the author, rather than seeing himself or herself as the author of it, sees as the victim of it. So we ascribe a story with a mind of its own to our own creation. So this is also why there are so many coachable moments that happen in a session. This is why I ask each client, when I began with them in mentor coaching, may I interrupt you at any point that I feel it might be helpful for both of us to look at something? And inevitably they say yes, and I give them permission also to interrupt me, because if something doesn't make sense, you know, why not look at it at that time and get realigned? So, another example of the power of story is a woman I know who recalled, a former client who recalled an incident from her adolescence. She attended a Catholic all-girls boarding school. She said, at one party, I started a rumor that the punch was spiked and everybody got drunk. 10, your life is the self-statement, the manifestation of what exists inside you. what we say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of our beliefs and personal realities. All that you say and do is about yourself. So clients are making self-statements. So don't take it personally, but listen to their story and what they're telling you about themselves. You define yourself. Other people's definitions of you are more about them, to make them feel better, or what they do or don't want to own, or what they want to disavow or project. 11, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Neuroscience show that pure facts are a myth. Quantum physics seconds the motion. This observation, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, came originally from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. So when you ask a client, what do you do for your fitness, or what kind of exercise do you do? You're not being a personal trainer. You're being a coach who wants to incorporate a reflection of an entire composition of a personal story. And you may hear something that may at some point be a mutual discussion. And 12, an authentic belief in someone. This is so important. And this is why I think it's so important that we work with clients in whom we believe. An authentic belief in someone activates their brain to create a state of mind that transcends their usual thinking and performance. This comes from neuroscience, even though good parents have known this for centuries. So let's return just briefly to the question about the difficulty of change. Why do we resist change, even changing a story that doesn't work, sometimes even doing it harder? Part of the answer is in our minds. We repeat the same story because it's our comfort zone. It's secure and predictable. A comfort zone can be limiting or uncomfortable, but it's familiar. It's the default model. We repeat because we know how it's going to turn out. That can create the illusion of effectiveness. But it's the essence of a habit. A new story, on the other hand, anything new and different, even a step into a new and different way of responding, generates uncertainty and trepidation. The easiest and fastest way for the client is to end that discomfort, to go back to the familiar, the old story. So people fail to change because they don't feel safe changing. Changing means leaving their home base of reality. We'll return to this in the roadmap process. The internal change that is synonymous with identity. So we tend to return to our default mode because it's already well-grooved, it's on the automatic mode, and it has become part of our identity. Now, why do people return to their comfort zone? Well, add significant success or significant stress, a major transition, really out of a comfort zone. So we're going to talk about comfort zones and how to program change, because there's always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. And the comfort zone is predictable and automatic. It's like your home thermostat. Anytime you move a degree or two, it activates to return to that central mode. So think about how subtle a comfort zone can be in determining choices, what you eat, the difficulty of starting a new exercise program. So remember, a habit is not a definition. It's a choice that gets repeated. If someone characterizes something that they have repeatedly done as if it's part of their identity, it makes it harder to change. So to look at it as a choice, and the choice architecture each time can be important. Now, the other part of why the answer to why change is difficult is in our brains. Here's an example. Some of you heard me give this before. I think it's a simple, vivid example. The hypnotherapist, Dr. Milton Erickson, told a story from his childhood. Whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school, so he would create a fresh path in the snow. And he intentionally created a circuitous path, zigzags and indirect turns. He noticed that every person who followed him followed the same path. Until the end of the day, that path was well-worn, despite its very circuitous route. No one started a new, more direct route. No matter how many turns and twists, every person followed the path of least resistance. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain, by early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, and are circuitous. So, to do something different, to create a new path in the snow, discomfort and uncertainty began any significant journey. So I think we have to be empathically resonant and understanding of our clients who have trepidation or uncertainty or anxiety just about doing something new with every step initially. We need to be there with them, help them understand and reframe that rather as something bad is about to happen to progress as a signpost of being in new territory, to reframe that experience of discomfort rather than as anxiety, and the brain registers anxiety and excitement in exactly the same way, any kind of activation. Rather than framing it as danger, better head for cover, and anxiety, protect yourself, to reframe it at that instant as a challenge, as an opportunity, even as a signal of moving in new territory in a new way. So listen for the power of story here. Your brain can rewire new experiences, practice consistently, form new neuronal pathways and new neural networks. And some remarkable new research shows both beliefs as well as repeating new experiences can both alter gene expressions. It's the whole fairly newer field of epigenetics. So when we write a new story, we change our minds and we change our brains. So here's an aspect I think that has a particular application to us as professional coaches. I'm going to describe a study and have you guess the biggest change impact. And you're on mute, so if you read or heard this from me before or know it somehow, you won't do a spoiler. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the UK devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects chose a different option from polls of contrasting behaviors, like lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive. They would pick one and be that the entire day and behave according to that. So an introverted person, if they chose extrovert, they would act that way the whole day. Additionally, twice weekly, he had them stretch to behave in a new way outside their usual patterns. He would ask them to read something they had never read before or to eat something they had never eaten before each week. So, after 4 months, what do you think was the biggest change in this group? The remarkable finding, I think, was that after 4 months, the subjects lost an average of 11 pounds. Now, this baffled the researchers because it wasn't a study about food or weight or eating or diet. 6 months later, almost all had kept the weight off and continued to lose weight. So this was a study focusing on change and its impact. So what happened? Well, to require people to change routine behavior makes them actually think about decisions rather than habitually choosing a default mode without consideration. In other words, each person, when they began to eat, they were aware of it. And they ultimately began to ask themselves, is this in my best interest? Ultimately, many did that with each bite. Is this bite in my best interest? So they created a choice architecture rather than, you know, a default way of just moving into a zone and eating. So once becoming aware of actively making choices, you can decide what's in your best interest, what furthers your story, and what doesn't. It's not there until you create it. So I want to kind of summarize and close with some principles of facilitating change. And this, I think, is is certainly designed from my viewpoint with us as mentor coaches in mind, and is a preface to writing a new wellness story. And this is, some of it's so simple. One, each person's life story is created. In adulthood, you create whatever you think and feel and experience each moment. Every day is a blank page until you begin writing on it, even though it seems to the individual to just be the way things are because of the default mode and the unconscious desire to repeat that. And what we do then in coaching may be called story busting, or to break the script. We look at the chart's architecture at this moment and to see, like Ben Fletcher's study, to be aware of that and to possibly self-reflect. Two, knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. And I heard this back in the day when I had a service on the alcohol treatment unit when I was formerly a shrink and a psychoanalyst. And this, I was given permission. One of my old codger counselors said this to patients, and it seemed powerful. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. That's pretty simple, but pretty important. Three, people create their own answers, and when they do, they've signed on to invest in the outcome. So this is keeping the point of reference in the client for the developing the client story. The client is protagonist of that story. They begin each session by looking at what they want to focus on. They determine the end point of the map for that session of what they want to take away, and you co-create that process each time with their focus. It's their story. Change is four. Change is constant and inevitable. It's the resistance to change that generates most problems. Five, small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue in order to specify progress. So this is what we do to shrink the change, for example, to create a system. You're overwhelmed by the amount of tasks. Focus on one aspect, one issue, and a next step that would constitute progress. Six, problems, causes, and solutions are not always related or even interconnected. Correlation is not the same as causality, as you know. To resolve a problem, even emotionally, to come to the end of the past does not create a blueprint for success. That's why there are a lot of frustrated therapy refugees. Specific plans for specific goals are necessary. If something is totally a new experience, you may need a guide, even for something like a healthier diet or exercise. Seven, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what's not will become evident and self-perpetuating. And that's a basic tenet of mentor coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. Eight, you need to know where you're going, goals and strategies, a map for each session. Setting a goal will actually enhance motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. So the end should be in mind from the beginning. One of the 48 laws of power is plan all the way to the end. And that's as true for any coaching conversation as it is for a coaching engagement. Lewis Carroll said it very succinctly. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" responded the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." Nine, you need the correct paradigm. A paradigm, also called a mindset, is a model. It's a theory or frame of reference. It's simply the way we see the world. I gave the example just moments ago of activation in the brain. Our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety or excitement and challenge. How we frame it boots up the particular mindset to process the remainder of that experience. So if you boot up mindset, perceiving it as danger, you're headed in one direction. If you perceive it as challenge and opportunity, you have a very different way to proceed. So that's why, in one sense, we may want to interrupt a client. Well, here's the problem, and here's the way I see it. Let's look instead at the possibility here. In other words, the client has a problem down. They've got it down. It's rehearsed. That's what they talk about over Chardonnay on the patio with their buddies. You're talking about something new and different, looking at possibilities and creating a collaborative strategy to successively approximate a goal. So having the correct paradigm means having the correct mindset and the accompanying mental models to use to do that. So it's important to have a framework that will create possibilities and to do that collaboratively. 10, decide what you want, believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is the mind's command to the brain, the software that drives behavior. And as I mentioned, we know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or off, and you can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are determined by what we allow ourselves to see and perceive. I'm going to put us on discussion mode, so if you'll manage the background noise, I'm interested in any questions, clarifications, thoughts, any kind of things that would be helpful for us to talk about. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. What you got? What would be helpful to discuss briefly? Any clarifications first of anything that I talked about? What about questions or thoughts about any of the aspects that we discussed? Does this really address in a way of thinking about how you might want to adapt your own way of approaching your coaching, especially if it applies to wellness?
Yeah.
Thoughts or questions,
Marcia,
about that? Go ahead.
Marcia Dixon.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I really like the way you talked about breaking the story, because that's so important, especially in the generation of 20 to 45 or even older, in all generations really. But being able to break that story allows you to breathe, actually, that another story can come in. So I really like the way you did that. I'll talk about
our brains are designed to perceive and process things in terms of stories. It's how we remember things. And like the example from Waterloo, the completion of the story was to say it out loud, what was being read. That was not a passive way of doing it. And think about how, as I mentioned just briefly, our simple coaching model that we use, those of you who trained at CTA, I know are very familiar with it, but every coaching conversation with a client is its own story, a coaching story for that session, whether it's 15 minutes or 50 minutes. And the three story components that are the same components of every successful story, whether it's a blog, whether it's a coaching session, whether it's a novel, a nonfiction book, or a discussion on the patio with that, come back to the Chardonnay, the challenge, the development, and the resolution. Every story has a challenge. You develop it to look at all the aspects of it and then come to a resolution, a closure, because that's what creates a memory. So simple coaching model does that to create a map. The challenge is, what would you like to focus on, and then where would you like to get to? And then the development is throughout the entire session, and the resolution then, the two questions at the end, most likely to be beneficial, is how would you summarize the benefit that you're taking away from this session? It's the same thing that I ask you guys to think about writing from this seminar. What is the most important thing you're taking away? And then the second question and part of the resolution is, based on that, what do you commit to do before we meet again? So you're moving it into a commitment so that that person, our client, has made a commitment to themselves out loud, made it very specific and time-bound, and knows what the next step is. So a commitment begins with, I will, not I need to, I should, I ought to, I'm going to try. But also, when someone makes a commitment out loud, they are more likely to follow through because it will fit their identity when they follow through on what they've committed to do, because it resonates with their ideal of who and what they want to be. So I know we're out of time. Send me any questions or follow-up that we didn't have time to discuss. I want to respect our time frame here. Send it to me an email, and I'll promise I'll look at it and incorporate it, if at all possible, into our discussion. So I'm still interested in your responses to those two questions. So thanks very much. I really look forward to picking up right here next time. We'll begin looking at the roadmap system applied to a wellness story. So thanks very, very much. Have a great rest of the week. And, of course, take good care of yourself. See you now.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Very, very much.
Bye.